Poetry uses words that are put together in such a way that evoke an emotional response through sound and rhythm. Poets choose their words to enhance their expressions. A word can be used literally or to represent a feeling. Nature is often used, including insects. Though poetry is a relatively new interest for Dr. Donald Steinkraus, he has always been interested in bugs, now seeking out their role in poetry. An entomologist at the University of Arkansas, he is also our Ozarks at Large insect expert. Dr. Steinkraus brought in some of his favorite poems, along with his wife Jane, who has always been interested in poetry. I began by asking him how he sees insects most often used in the poems that he reads.
Yeah, I think it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're very accurate about their use of an insect. More often, I think there's a few errors as an entomologist I see in how they use the insect, but still has a poetical reason for being there.
It seems like often they're used as part of a metaphor. But then also, I mean, we brought a variety of different poems because some of them, they'll be part of a scene, like something that is part of a scene that someone loves, and then other times there'll be a metaphor for something that's going on in their lives.
All right, just another kind of broad question. I don't know, this is might be kind of silly, but as a doctor of insect study and a lover of poetry, what if you were to sit down and write a poem? How would you use an insect in a poem? Mm.
I actually have often written about insects in poems. Yeah.
Okay.
But I do look and watch for insects all the time, and I use them maybe as an analogy for my own self. When I see them die or if I see them singing, you know, I try to think of myself doing that. Some of the poets, like I have a poetry book by Issa, a haiku poet from Japan, and they really think of the insects as companions and friends. They don't treat them as like an other. You know, it's like you can be friends with an insect to some of these poets. So there's all different ways they've used these.
Do we want to look at one of them since
sure.
You've picked up the book?
Issa was a poet that lived in 1763 to 1827 in Japan. And these are translations into the English. Well, this one, I like this one because he treats the lightning bug as an old friend. Here it is. First lightning bug this year, why do you turn away? It's me, Issa. So he's telling the lightning bug, here I am again.
Yeah,
you, there you are, here I am, it's me.
It's summertime, there you are. Yeah.
Okay. So it's come back. There's a lot of good poems in here. Maybe Jane should read one.
Singing high, a cricket on a log floating down the river.
So, you know, what I like about that poem is, we're sort of all on a log floating down the river.
Yeah.
And the cricket is singing while he's floating down the river. And each of us are going down that river of life. And, you know,
yeah.
Might be good to be a cricket singing on mm-hmm. a log.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Okay. You mentioned that you have some other haikus.
These are by Taniguchi Busan, who lived in the 1700s, another Japanese. On a one-ton temple bell, a moon moth, folded into sleep, sits still.
That's sort of different. It's different than the other poet. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. You know, to me, a moon moth is, if they've translated it correctly, is like our Luna moth. They're one of those big, long-tailed Saturniid moths, and they do rest. In the daytime, they'll sit quietly all day. And so I can imagine the poet saw this big moth sitting on the bell, and it was a beautiful sight, this calm moth on the bell.
Well, it's definitely a stunning moth, for sure.
Yes, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
How do you think they get it so right? You said a lot of them get it really, really right on, spot on. I mean, are they doing their research?
Yeah, I think one is, I think poets are observers. They are observers of nature, especially those that are interested in nature. I think some poets are really interested in mankind only, and they don't use insects and nature in their poems. But like Mary Oliver uses nature all the time.
It's a kind of white moth, I don't know what kind, that glimmers. It does in the daylight, in mid-May, in the forest, just as the pink moccasin flowers are rising. If you notice anything, it leads you to notice more.
The wings of
the
moth
catch the sunlight and burn so brightly. At night, sometimes they slip between the pink lobes of the moccasin flowers and lie there until dawn, motionless, in those dark halls of honey.
Well, that, and it definitely starts out as, yeah, she doesn't sound like an expert necessarily. She's just somebody that's sitting in the woods, you know.
Right. She doesn't try to identify the moth, because she doesn't, and actually some of those little white moths are hard to identify.
Right. But just a white moth with glistening wings, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she observes, she sees it, and makes an accurate observation about it. I think a lot of the poets just notice things. We have some poems by some really famous poets. William Wordsworth wrote about butterflies.
I love butterflies.
Do you? Should I read this one?
Yeah.
To a Butterfly by William Wordsworth. I've watched you now a full half hour, self-poised upon that yellow flower. And little butterfly, indeed, I know not if you sleep
come
or feed.
Come often
to us, fear no wrong. Sit near us on the bough. We'll talk of sunshine and of song, and summer days when we were young, sweet childish days that were as long as 20 days are now. Now, what I like about that is he's welcoming the butterfly to his garden and saying, I want you here. I want you in my garden. I want to watch you. And a common theme I see in a lot of these poets is they know that insects usually only live a very short time.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What is the 20 days?
Here, sweet childish days were as long as 20 days are now. When you're a child, I think days are long.
Right.
And now as you get older, they get shorter.
I know. It's Monday again. Yeah.
Right. It goes really fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of them think of the butterfly as or the insect as an example of a short-lived creature sort of signifies what human life is like, too.
So you mentioned that when you write poems, you kind of put yourself in them. They're, you kind of use insects to represent yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you were to pick one insect that you compare yourself to, or Jane, which insects would you choose?
For me, it's a katydid. I love katydids. They're a very harmless insect. They are really important to me when they sing in the trees at night, and they're really beautiful and slow moving, and I just love to hear them sing, and so I often think about them and how they live, and most people don't really notice them as much as you'd think. They just hear the sound and they go on about their day, but they live a life just like we do.
Yeah. Okay.
How about you? What would you be?
I don't know.
Maybe a butterfly. Now, have you ever heard of a songwriter, jazz songwriter, bass player, singer named Esperanza Spalding?
Yes.
You know, she has a song, and this is a poem by William Blake that she wrote. Word for word, she wrote Blake's poem, The Fly.
Into a song.
Okay,
and it's
how
a fantastic
awesome.
Jazz song. So this is by William Blake. And,
yes,
he's comparing a fly to us. Little fly, thy summer's play, my thoughtless hand has brushed away.
My thoughtless hand has brushed away.
Life and strength and breath, and the want of thought is death, then am I a happy fly if I live or if I die. You know, I like that. He says some thoughtless hand. You know, we thoughtlessly kill flies all the time. And he says, until some thoughtless hand may brush us away like a car accident.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, we both love Jane Kenyon. And I think that butterflies and moths are often seem to be associated in some way with death in people's minds, being because we mostly see them at night. And then butterflies with death and resurrection. And I thought this was an interesting poem that she wrote, I think when her mother was dying, although I'm not positive about that, but has a moth in it. It's called Reading Late of the Death of Keats. I tried to distract myself by reading late, but the rhythmic whir and puff of the oxygen machine reached me where I lay in the room that was mine in childhood.
A huge moth bumped against the screen, tattering its wings. I turned off the lamp and lay all ears until it flew or fell away.
Aww.
I think she was sick at that time, too, wasn't she? She had cancer, I think.
She did, but I think she's listening to the... Well, maybe I'm wrong. I was thinking she was listening to the machine while her mom was dying.
But maybe it's her her own.
Not totally sure.
Again, I like that. A huge moth. It's almost definitely either a sphinx moth, which are the hummingbird moths, or a Saturnian moth, and they are big.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it could be an underwing. But just interesting. You know, there's this poet, and in comes the moth, and I'm not sure exactly what she means by that.
It's bumping against the screen. And then she's lying there all ears until it flew or fell away. I mean...
Because you're laying there and you can't
and also
do anything
else.
Because
I think she's in the presence of death.
Yep. No, sorry. Emily Dickinson used insects a lot in her poetry. So, and they're short. Shall I read a couple of her poems?
Sure.
Maybe Jane should read them. But they, a lot of them have to do with bees. This is by Emily Dickinson. The pedigree of honey does not concern the bee. A clover any time to him is aristocracy. That's a very short, concise poem, and she does make one error in it. She thinks the bees that gather honey are hims, are boys, and that's often a mistake people made over time when all the bees that gather honey are female.
Mm-hmm. The bees actually, I didn't think bees actually gathered honey, right?
No, they don't. They gather nectar.
Right. Making sure that my...
Yeah, they gather nectar and they turn it into honey.
Right.
But on the other hand, bees also rob. If a hive gets weak, honeybees will...
Well, okay.
...diligently rob their neighbor. And then they will be taking the honey.
But it's always the female bees that are gathering the nectar and the pollen. And,
absolutely.
And then and also stealing the honey from the
That's
weak
right.
hive.
And also defending the hive. The females are the ones that sting... They're the ones that do everything in the hive, except for a few little things that the drones do.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because it was like gathering honey, and I'm like, wait, hang on a second.
Just
making sure that my bee knowledge was on, just making sure. One book that I brought in was, you know, one that I read as a child, but, you know, it's a lot more, it's a educational kind of thing.
I like
I don't
that
know.
Book.
Maybe I was looking at it. But it's for two voices.
Oh,
so
well, Jane and you.
You guys,
no,
you guys need to read one.
No, you and Jane read it. Jane?
So this one's Water Boatman, and then you read it together, and then one person does
stroke.
We're water boatmen.
Stroke. Up early, rowing.
Stroke. We're coxswain calling.
Stroke. And oarsman straining.
Stroke. And six-man racing shell, rolled into one.
We're water boatmen.
Stroke. Worn out from rowing.
Stroke. Bound for the bottom.
Stroke. Of this deep mill pond.
Stroke. Where we arrive.
And shout the order,
rest.
The poem Jane Steinkraus and I read together is entitled Water Boatman. It's from the book Joyful Noise, Poems for Two Voices by Paul Fleischman. Dr. Donald Steinkraus is an entomologist at the University of Arkansas. He and his wife Jane joined me to talk about insects' role in poetry. This is Ozarks at Large.